Good evening and welcome to tonight's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. I'm George Dobbins. I'm the Vice President of Programs here at the club. If you'd please now make sure that all your cell phones, PDAs, and any noise-making devices are turned off, we'd appreciate that. And before we begin, I'd like to tell you about some upcoming programs here at the club. On this coming Monday, July 27th, actress Patty Duke will talk about her life and career in conversation with entertainment reporter Jan Wall. This will be a 6 p.m. program here at the club office. And on Tuesday, July 28th, I think this will interest many people in the room, legendary documentary filmmaker Albert Maysles will be here. His work includes Gimme Shelter and Grey Gardens, and he will discuss all of it. This will also be a 6 p.m. program here at the club office. We also want to let you know that for information on all of our programs, you can pick up a copy of the magazine The Commonwealth in the lobby, or you can go to commonwealthclub.org. You'll also note on your seats a survey asking your input on Commonwealth Club activities. We'd really appreciate you filling this out. It's anonymous, and it will really help the club understand more of the interests and needs of its members. Now on to tonight's special program. You'll notice there are no written question cards on your seats tonight, and that's because we're going to do informal verbal questions toward the latter part of this program. And you'll notice there are two microphone stands on either side of the aisle. And if you do have any questions toward the end, save them up, and you'll get a chance to ask them of Steve Talbot. A bit later on, I'm pleased to say that Mr. Talbot will also be joined by Marissa Neff, who is a reporter on Soundtracks, which you're going to hear all about tonight. So we're in store for a very, very, very good program for you tonight. Let me tell you a little bit about Steve Talbot before we introduce him. Tonight, you're going to see a sneak peek, of course, at the content and behind-the-scenes process of what it takes to create, finance, and launch the new series Soundtracks for PBS. Steve Talbot is the program's executive producer, and he brings with him a distinguished media career. Steve is a veteran documentary writer and producer who's made over 30 documentaries for television, including 10 films for the PBS series Frontline. Along the way, he's won nearly every major award in the field, Emmys, Peabody's, Webby's, a DuPont, George Polk, Overseas Club of America, Edward R. Murrow Award, even an Edgar Allan Poe Award from the Mystery Writers of America. As the series editor for Frontline World from 2002 to 2008, Steve Talbot commissioned and supervised nearly 100 broadcast stories. He won two Emmys in 2007 for being senior producer of a Frontline World documentary, Saddam's Road to Hell, and an online video, Libya, Out of the Shadow. He began his public television career in 1980 as a staff reporter and producer at KQED in San Francisco, where he did local investigative reporting and a series of critically acclaimed PBS biographies of such writers as Dashiell Hammett, Beryl Markham, Maxine Hong Kingston, Carlos Fuentes, and Ken Kesey. At KQED, he also produced dozens of feature reports for the McNeil-Lehrer NewsHour. Over the years, he's written also on politics and culture for a wide range of publications, including Salon, the San Francisco Chronicle, Washington Post, Los Angeles Times, Nation, and Rolling Stone. In 2008, with his brother David Talbot, the founder of Salon.com, Steve formed a media production company in San Francisco called the Talbot Players. Their slogan is From Story to Screen, and they're doing books, TV programs, and movie projects with Simon & Schuster, Lionsgate, and PBS, among other companies. Lastly, I should tell you that Mr. Talbot's exposure to film and television goes back much further than we've already mentioned. His father was veteran character actor Lyle Talbot, a founding member of the Screen Actors Guild, who some of you may remember as the next-door neighbor on the classic TV series The Adventures of Ozzie and Harriet. And during this same period of time, Steve Talbot, then a child actor, also played on television the role of Gilbert on the classic TV series Leave It to Beaver. And he still looks the same today. To show and tell us about his newest project, Soundtracks, please give a warm welcome to Steve Talbot.
We won't talk about Leave It to Beaver, I swear to God. Thank you very much for coming. I recognize a lot of faces. Hi, Emiko. Just spotted you there. Long time and a lot of new faces. This is a really exciting project to me. I left Frontline last year after almost 20 years there, and I was coaxed away. I was ready to leave, and I was coaxed away by my brother, my close friend and only brother who we shared bunk beds growing up, traded secrets, but have never worked together. And Dave said, let's form a company together. And Dave is a man of great enthusiasms, and I couldn't say no. So last year we started this, and he and Karen Croft, who is our vice president, our non-Talbot player, Karen and David and I have offices now in the Coppola building, Sentinel building in North Beach. And Dave is writing screenplays, has optioned his book about the Kennedys, brothers, that came out 2 years ago in Hollywood. So he's doing that, and I get to pursue my passion, really, to, late in my career, do a show about music. I've always used a lot of music in documentaries. In fact, I think, hey, John, one of my favorite reviews I ever got was when I did a film about Ken Kesey. And I'm a 60s guy. I spent a lot of time worrying about the music, getting the exact month that song came out in 1968, that sort of thing. And it was reviewed by the music reviewer for the Oakland Tribune and treated like a music show. And I love that guy. I'll remember that review as long as I live. So I've always wanted to do music shows, and this is the chance. So what we're trying to do here is do a series that doesn't exist yet. This is really new territory. We're trying to do a series that's a journalist series, a serious series that's reporting what's going on in the world, that's also a travel show, but that looks at the world through music. And we sold it to PBS, miraculously, just before the entire economy collapsed. And had my brother come to me more recently, I might still be in frontline. But there we are in this brave new world. And is Barry Traub here? Barry? You have to say, okay. Mr. Traub has made, really, Talbot Players possible. So, Barry, we owe a lot to you. And I think we're going to deliver on some great projects for you. So thank you very much. Again, seriously. He's a terrific guy, terrific man. So PBS went for this. And I'm going to start just by showing you how we sold this to them. Because some of you may be in the business. I recognize a lot of you are. How do you do this? How do you get PBS, which can be very stodgy, which has a problem in losing their audience these days? They're not getting younger people to watch as much as they would like. So they're concerned about that. They want to protect the franchise, so they're careful about doing something new, but they know they need to do something new. So with that background, we walked in. We prepared this. This was, for those of you in the business, this has been online. Many of you have seen this, but just to get us in the spirit of the show, this runs 7 minutes, and this is our pitch reel. This is what we walked into Washington in a strange place where PBS is now, right across the street from the Pentagon, in Crystal City, where strange people are in the coffee bar downstairs doing arms deals for Kyrgyzstan. I mean, it's very odd. And the Sesame Street people come in. It's a very odd situation. I'll tell you about our Sesame Street connection later with Marissa Neff, our reporter who's here tonight. And before we get started, because she's at the controls tonight, where she often is, Emily Taguchi. Stand up, Emily. Emily is our associate producer on the pilot. And I've asked her to work on this series because she's terrific. And she came out of the Graduate School of Journalism at Berkeley, where I've been based for the last 6 years working on Frontline World. Met a lot of terrific students. Another person here, Bob Kahlo, I want to introduce, who's our senior producer. Bob's an old friend from KQED, went on to National Network TV, and is going to be a senior producer on this series. And David Richer, who's one of our star editors. You'll see his piece. So, no further ado, this is the promo reel. This is how we sold this to PBS. Soundtracks.
Thank you. You're in control. Is there anywhere you wanna go? You're in control. Is there anything you wanna know? The future's for discovering. The space in which we travel in.
I'm Marco Werman, and I'll be the host of Soundtracks. I get to roam the globe, report about the music I find, and the people that make it. And along the way, I'll explore different cultures, sample the food, and try not to get into too much trouble. I've been doing this for years on public radio. Now on Soundtracks, I'll bring these stories to television. I'll be working with three other reporters, Alexis Bloom, Arun Rath, and Marissa Neff. Alexis has reported all over the world, politics, sports, human rights.
I was born in South Africa and have lived on three continents. As I've covered the world, I've come to realize we have much more in common than we think. We all love music, right? And who doesn't like to bang a drum? Bala is a musician from Mali in West Africa. His instrument, the kora, strikes a universal chord.
Harp, sitar, guitar or piano, all this instrument was imitated from the kora. It doesn't make with a machine, it's a handmade instrument.
So who made your kora?
Oh, my grandfather. He died 117 years old.
117?
Yeah.
Wow.
They don't eat junk food.
Arun is another globe-trotting reporter. He's into classical music and jazz.
Playing the trumpet helps me unwind, but you do not want to be around to hear it. My parents are from India and England, but I grew up in the States. I like reporting about the intersection of culture and politics. One of the strangest and most fascinating stories I ever did was about a street opera in Calcutta, where I found Osama bin Laden.
I hate to say this, but I probably wouldn't be able to walk too far through America dressed up like that.
Marissa writes about music in San Francisco and is a performer herself.
I've been a professional DJ for 6 years. My favorite music comes from the world's hot zones like Brazil. It's what I call equatorial beats. I live on the West Coast now in a community of artists from all over the world. But I'm a wanderer, always searching. My family has roots stretching from the Caribbean to the Ukraine.
In each hour-long episode of Soundtracks, we'll take you on a trip. three different places, three compelling stories, and at the end, a performance from somewhere in the world by a hot new group.
Man, he never gonna die, no. And this man.
Our stories might take you to Warsaw and the Chopin competition to see which of these young prodigies will win the grand prize. We slip inside the Kremlin to find out who wrote this catchy propaganda song. And in Mozambique, we meet an Afropop star who's writing songs to save lives in a national health campaign. It's an on-the-road experience, music without borders, beautifully shot in HD. With stories that illuminate the world we live in, and storytellers who will connect with viewers. Soundtracks will open your mind, warm your heart, and make you want to dance. We're ready. We'll take you there.
Thank you. So we worked very hard on that. We stole a lot of stories from my previous series, Frontline World, which is where I initially had the idea of doing music stories with Marco Werman, from who was just out here last week working on stories for the series with us. So that did it. But the other thing was that I brought in the reporters. So Marissa, come on up. Marissa has been for 10 years the art director for the San Francisco Bay Guardian, and as we said in the promo, is a professional DJ,
yes,
and a photographer, and very knowledgeable about Brazil and Equatorial music, which we're going to hit her up for heavily on this show. We're going to show you a bunch of stories tonight, so you'll see what's coming up, including, I'll let Marissa describe what she did for this first episode. This is the rest from here on out is a sneak preview. No one's ever seen any of this. So we really do appreciate feedback on this. Send it to steve@talbotplayers.com. I'll remind you later. But we really do want feedback, informally after tonight, and then emails would be really appreciated at this stage. So Marissa Neff.
Thanks. Thanks, Steve. It's great to be here, and it's been such a thrilling project so far, and we're so pleased to be able to share what we've done so far with you guys. Pretty much we're going to show you about three-quarters of our pilot episode. And we're going to start off with a piece that was done by our reporter Alexis Bloom and produced by Victoria Gamberg. And it's kind of linked to part of what you saw in the promo reel. So hope you guys enjoy.
And then we're going to, I'll say a few words. I'll pretend we're the bridge in between,
yes,
these stories. Because
exactly.
So, we don't have
we're
the packaging yet.
Yeah,
still doing that. But you'll recognize this, as Marissa said, from the reel you just saw. We decided we had to go to Russia. And we had to find out who did the song, A Man Like Putin. So you'll see the crazy story. And then we'll just talk briefly and we'll keep it going, basically, through the show. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
When I think of Russia, all sorts of music comes to mind. Tchaikovsky, Rachmaninoff, even themes from spy thrillers. But what's brought me to Moscow is something altogether different. Propaganda music. The USSR may be gone, its old anthems a relic of the past. But a new kind of propaganda music lives on. And today, propaganda has a whole new beat. Russian leader Vladimir Putin is treated like a rock star with his own personal propaganda song, which they sing at his rallies. This is not your grandfather's propaganda music. Written in 2002, it especially appeals to Putin's young supporters. It's become his theme song.
Великой России!
I came to Moscow to investigate who was behind this song and how it was used in Putin's rise to power. In a rehearsal studio, I met the man who wrote the song. His name is Alexander Yelin. These days, he's promoting a new group, an all-girl heavy metal band. Yelin used to be a rock and roll dissident back in the days of the USSR.
Рок-музыкантом в советское время было быть очень прикольно. Неважно, кто как пел, неважно, как это все было с профессиональной точки зрения, важен был факт, что вот мы никогда не, у нас не было рок-н-ролла, а теперь он есть.
Today, Yelin's part of the music industry establishment. A little older, a lot more cynical. He says he wrote A Man Like Putin on a bet.
Когда я поспорил на $300, что можно раскрутить песню без всякого бюджета на клипы и на все остальное, просто за смысл как бы этой песни. Я просто технологично подошел к вопросу. Да, кто главный ньюсмейкер в стране? Владимир Владимирович Путин.
Yelin knew that writing a Soviet-style propaganda song about Putin would never sell in today's Russia.
О чем должна спеть девушка? Она не может спеть о том, что Путин самый хороший или Путин такой прекрасный, и это было бы глупо и не смешно. А вот о том, что все вокруг нее плохо, а вот такой, как Путин, ей очень нравится, мальчика она такого хочет.
The bet was on, but Yelin needed a producer. So he turned to old friend Nikolai Gastello. These days, Gastello is a DJ at Russia's top radio station. Back in 2002, he was working for the Kremlin.
В тот момент я был государственный служащий, я руководил пресс-службой Верховного суда Российской Федерации.
But he was moonlighting in the music business, and he immediately saw the potential of the Putin song. He began searching for singers. Irina Kozlova was 18 years old when Gastello spotted her in a nightclub. She had just finished a world tour as a dancer and was ready to try something new. Gastello promised to make her a star.
There was a poll that was done recently where Russian women voted Vladimir Putin the sexiest man in the world. Why is this?
Я думаю, что Безусловно, он обладает некоторыми качествами, о которых поется в песне. То есть надежность, ум, там, индивидуальность. Безусловно, он очень харизматичный и умный человек, на мой взгляд.
The other singer, Yana Danieko, came with a pedigree. Her father was a famous Soviet-era singer. She was honored when Gastello asked her to sing about Putin.
Путин, на первый взгляд, ну, мне кажется, что настолько спортивный и позитивный человек, потому что на него, в принципе, приятно смотреть даже по телевизору. Он активный, молодой, спортивный, и жилка вот этого лидера в нем, она видна. Поэтому я думаю, что ему суждено было стать лидером и любимцем народа.
Они врут и сегодня.
Яна и Ирина told me that Putin was not just their political leader, he was their ideal man. And this was exactly the sentiment that Yelin, the songwriter, hoped to exploit in the music video for A Man Like Putin.
В российском понимании, конечно, он секс-символ. Совсем не в американском. Он не Брэд Питт. Но для нормальной, средней, обычной, среднестатистической русской женщины, конечно, заполучить себе такого, как Путин, это мечта всей жизни.
These are the images all over Russia. Putin is black belt. Putin as commander, Putin as hunky fisherman. Who could the producers possibly get to play him in their music video? They discovered him in a garage in southern Russia. Anatoly Gorbunov is a natural-born ham. He builds antique cars and made this slapstick video with the goofy music to advertise his company. When Putin became president in 2000, Anatoly suddenly found himself in demand as a Putin impersonator. Once they'd found their Putin, the producers were ready to make their music video. Gastello cast himself as Putin's right-hand man, plotting the release of a propaganda song. The video has a secret agent feel. Putin as spy master, complete with his Bond girls. This was a new kind of propaganda. Ironic, funny. But had they gone too far? How would Putin react? Radio stations were nervous. What if he hated it? What if he thought he was being ridiculed?
Это подтвердил потом на пресс-конференции, его спросили, слышали ли он песню про Путина, он сказал, да, мне там очень понравилось, я долго смеялся, не против встретиться с симпатичными девушками, которые ее поют. Чувство юмора у Путина есть.
With Putin's nod of approval, the song took off on government radio stations. And the video was featured on Russia's MTV. Within weeks, the song hit number one on all the charts. Yelin and Gastello had done it. They created a new kind of propaganda song, a song for the Putin generation.
Ну, самое, наверное, незабываемое выступление наше было это... По-моему, 23 февраля, на День защитника Отечества, мы выступали в военной дивизии. Ребята подсовывали военные билеты, паспорта, просто на руках распишитесь, Христа ради. То есть и выводили нас в оцепление, мы думаем, мы тогда с Иркой там, дай пять, мы звезды.
Путин used the song throughout his presidency, especially during his 2004 re-election campaign. And the song is still played at pro-Putin rallies. Putin. Though his presidential term ended in 2008, he continues to wield power as prime minister. But of course, not everyone in Russia admires Putin or his song. One of the last independent media outlets in Russia is Echo of Moscow Radio. The founder, Sergei Buntman, is an outspoken critic of Putin's propaganda.
Some people have said to me, people here are kind of brainwashed. Is that too strong a word to use?
Нет, почему? Промывание мозгов, оно происходит каждый день. Потому что нет ни одного практически телевизионного канала, который бы охватывал всю страну, где было бы что-то серьезное на политические темы, альтернативное мышление. Этого нет.
When I asked him what he thought of the Putin song, Buntman said it was a clever whitewash.
Знаете, вот песня такого, как Путин, с одной стороны, она тоже вполне смешная. Это прикольно, если не думать, что, например, правление Путина началось с очень странных террористических актов, с взрывов в Москве, с Второй войны в Чечне. Если не думать об этом, то все достаточно весело.
Putin's manipulation of the media has strengthened his hold on power. But the popularity of the Putin song goes way beyond politics, according to Yelin, the songwriter.
Всему миру кажется, что главное в этой песне такого, как Путин. А русские полюбили эту песню, потому что там продолжается, чтобы не пил, чтобы не убежал, чтобы не гулял. И русские любят песни о страдающих женщинах. И эта песня, по сути, очень трогательная, потому что это правда реальная женская трагедия. Женщина живет в провинции, вокруг нее грязь, ужасные пьющие люди. Вообще кошмар. И она хочет такого, как показывают по телевизору.
If I was a Russian woman, would I want a man like Putin?
Конечно, по сравнению со всеми, кто были до него, все эти давно нефертильные дедушки и, как говорится, плохо говорящие, конечно, однозначно.
Putin has gone out of his way to show that he is a strong man, releasing martial arts videotapes where he body slams opponents. It all plays into Russian nostalgia for a time when their country was a superpower. Feel-good songs about the Soviet Union are back, and one of the most popular singers performing them is Yana. The same Yana who made A Man Like Putin a mega hit. I watched as she sang a 70s era song, remixed for the Putin generation. Her partner, Mikhail, is the winner of Russia's version of American Idol. They're like a Russian Partridge Family, bringing Brezhnev-era songs back to life.
Does your father ever say to you, your father who lived during the Soviet Union, times were not actually that good then? You guys are crazy for being nostalgic about those days?
Нет, папа мне такого не говорил, потому что он сам до сих пор поет эти песни с таким же удовольствием, как и мы.
Yana claims these are simply great tunes, and she doesn't analyze the lyrics.
Мой адрес не дом и не улица, мой адрес Советский Союз. Мой адрес не дом.
But this song was originally written as a Soviet propaganda tune, and now it's being repackaged and sold again. In Putin's Russia, Moscow is a city of bright lights and glamour. However heavy-handed Putin may be, he has presided over an era of relative stability and prosperity, and he remains very popular. In Moscow's glittering night, it's all about enjoying the moment. The karaoke clubs are packed, and they're still playing that same old tune.
Такого, как Путин, полного сил. Такого, как Путин, чтоб и не пил. Такого, как Путин, чтоб не обижал. Такого, как Путин, чтоб не...
This night was a reunion. Yana and Irina offered to take the stage for us and sing the song that made them famous. Yana says no matter what, Putin will always be her president.
даже до сих пор, вот для меня, например, до сих пор Путин остается президентом. Вот я говорю просто чисто свое мнение, да, что как-то сейчас уже, после прихода даже Медведева, для меня все равно Путин остается президентом.
And Ирина, still single, is out there looking for a man like Putin.
Всегда хотела бы встретить мужчину, у которого было бы больше мозгов, чем у меня. А он просто должен быть мужчиной, а это все сказано, какая-то внутренняя харизма, яркость. Он должен быть лидер.
The producer Gastello says he's proud his pop song has made history.
Практически песня поколения. То есть через 30 лет буду снимать также фильм об эпохе Путина и вспомню про эту песню.
And Yellen, the old rock and roll dissident, says he has no regrets. His song became the anthem for the Putin generation.
Я профессиональный человек, и по брифу я могу написать все, что угодно. Если бы мне кто-то заказал такую песню, какая-нибудь буржуазная разведка, я бы ее написал за деньги. И посмеялся бы, потому что судьбы у этой песни не будет. Нету сейчас на рынке востребованности песни, которая бы критиковала Путина. Бесполезно критиковать Путина.
Thank you. So that's the kind of unexpected story that we hope to do among all the different types of music stories we'll do. A story that we think really gives you an insight into Russian society these days, although it's built around this silly, absolutely infectious and unfortunately unforgettable pop song. It will be in my head forever. You may have noticed the change in video quality. These are offline still. This has not been online. Christopher Hedge, are you around? Did a great sound mix for us. Is going to be our music supervisor on the story. Christopher is surreal. And David Richer, great editing job. Among other things, he speaks fluent Russian. David. Okay, so that's that one. We'll take questions about it later, but next...
So pretty much the theme for our pilot episode, we have an overarching theme for all of the episodes, and for this one, it's called Presidential Suites. So as you saw, this one had to do with a president, a former president, but it's also generally about politics. And the next piece is by our reporter Arun, and it takes place in Kazakhstan and Hollywood, and it relates to a national anthem or a faux national anthem. So I'll let you guys see the reveal. And here we go. Good.
It's the first day of spring along the old Silk Road in Central Asia. The people of Kazakhstan are celebrating their new year, Nowruz, a holiday that promises hope and renewal. This festival goes on for days, honoring a Kazakh culture that dates back to Genghis Khan. It's an ancient culture of warriors, nomads, and shamans. And it's home to one of the oldest instruments in the world, a tiny mouth harp. It's not as easy as it looks.
I'll get the hang of it eventually.
Wandering through this festival, I was constantly being surprised. It was all so unexpected, because all I'd seen of Kazakhstan before was in a Hollywood movie.
Yekshimash, I'm my name is Borat. I like you. I like sex. It's nice.
In 2006, Sacha Baron Cohen put Kazakhstan on the map. Well, sort of. Borat was actually shot in Romania, and the film was completely outrageous.
This is Natalia. She is my sister. She is number four prostitute in all of Kazakhstan. Nice.
Not surprisingly, most people in Kazakhstan were offended, especially the president, Nursultan Nazarbayev, who took his complaints to Washington and launched a global PR campaign to salvage his country's battered image. But there was one Kazakh who saw this controversy as an opportunity for himself and his country. Murat Bisengeliev is a virtuoso violinist, Kazakhstan's Itzhak Perlman. He's traveled the world, a cultural ambassador for Kazakhstan.
My first impression of Borat was, of course, very negative. But I'm one of those Kazakhs who think that this film is good for Kazakhstan. I was thrilled because at last Kazakhstan was noticed. At last there is a big interest in, to see the real Kazakhstan.
Murat told me there was plenty of damage to undo. The film had created a lot of false impressions.
They didn't use anything from Kazakh culture. No language elements, no music. And even the actors were from Romania.
And perhaps most offensive was the movie's fake national anthem.
Kazakhstan, greatest country in the world. All other countries are run by little girls. Kazakhstan's prostitutes, cleanest in the region, except of course for Turkmenistan.
The national anthem that was in the Borat movie, Kazakhstan, greatest country in the world, all other countries ruled by little girls. What was your take on that?
Well, it was so ridiculous, so over the top that, you know, anyone would smile.
Murat got the joke, but he couldn't just laugh it off.
Me personally, I just wanted something more to, I would say, to even up.
To, if you excuse the pun, even the score.
Yes, true.
But as I listened to Murat play, I wondered how he could turn this story around and, in the famous words of Borat, make benefit to the glorious nation of Kazakhstan. He did it by going straight into the belly of the beast, Hollywood. On a studio lot, I found the man who composed the soundtrack for Borat.
I can show you, I've got like, so that's my strings.
He was the key to Murat's plan.
I mean, at the moment, I've got, I think I've got a harp here.
This is Aaron Baron Cohen, the brother of Sacha Baron Cohen, who played Borat.
They're very realistic sounds, and I've got some horns somewhere. Actually, my horns aren't working.
Aaron writes the music for all his brother's movies, and he's the one who composed the infamous fake Kazakh national anthem.
What happened was they were going to use the real Kazakhstani national anthem, and they couldn't get permission to use it. And I got a call on one evening saying, well, we need a new anthem by tomorrow. And the idea was to put up this very big choir. Because it was the middle of the night, I couldn't get hold of anybody, so I just had to sing every part myself. So I multi-tracked about 40 times. The Kazakhstani government and embassies initially didn't really, was not their favorite movie. I think they banned it, in fact.
So no one was more surprised than Aaron when the phone rang and Murat Bisengeliev was on the line.
When this guy called Murat first rang me, I thought, is this a joke? Because, you know, the reaction had been from Kazakhstan so negative that to have someone from their orchestra ringing you up was, you know, interesting.
Murat's kind of, he's a little bit of an instigator.
Well, he's also a great musician, and he spoke about this idea of me writing a work for his orchestra. And although the initial concept of it seemed a bit funny, I do have an interest in, as you know, ethnic music and looking at things in a different way.
I'll say, Aaron is the kind of musician who has no problem mixing hip-hop with a Hanukkah classic.
Dreidel, dreidel, I made it out of clay. When I'm good and ready, dreidel, I'm gonna play. Oh, dreidel. Oh, dreidel. Oh, dreidel.
Murat, the instigator, was taking a chance on Aaron, the provocateur.
I suppose part of the idea of getting me to write music for the orchestra was he knew it'd be an interesting story, which it certainly was. I'd written for orchestra for some film scores, but never for a large symphonic orchestra. So it was a real challenge, but I like a challenge.
Aaron worked on the piece for months, pouring his heart into it. A symphony for Murat's orchestra. He called it Zare, his olive branch to Kazakhstan. Kazakhstan, the feelings are still raw about Borat. Murat knew he was playing with fire.
I'm not afraid to take risky projects, but probably Aaron's project was the most risky one.
Has there been any backlash against you personally for securing this commission?
Yes, I had a lot of comments that I'm some kind of traitor. Yes, you could find really harsh comments, of course, but, you know, I expected that. The main risk for me was to receive the score with a music which is not acceptable, which is not serious.
But that wasn't the case.
Yeah, that wasn't the case.
When Murat heard the music, he was relieved. Aaron's symphony was fresh and provocative. But what would Murat's countrymen think? Murat had been wary of performing the symphony in Kazakhstan. But now, he took another chance. He decided to debut Aaron's work in Kazakhstan's premier concert hall, if Soundtracks would be there to film it. That was an offer we couldn't refuse. Backstage, tensions were high. How would the audience react? Can a piece of music really make amends? Even the orchestra had its doubts.
Зире — это очень впечатляющая музыка. Ну, это сказать трудно одному человеку. Это должен говорить весь народ.
Crowd is looking a little bit thin at first, but it's filled out. You might have a packed audience.
Уважаемые дамы и господа.
Here we go.
Эрон Барон Коэн, Зире, первая часть. В Казахстане исполняется впервые. Солист Марат Бисенгалиев.
I have to admit that I'm quite nervous. I expect some polarized opinions of his music, especially here in Kazakhstan.
Mm-hmm. But as I listened to Murat play, I began to feel that everything was going to be all right. If atonement has a sound, this could be it.
What did you make of the fact that this was written by the brother of the guy who did Borat?
Actually, for me, it doesn't matter, you know, just nice music, you know. Music is music, you know, it's very international, so.
Music is a positive force. It brings people together where sometimes other things don't. So for me, you know, that's what music is about.
What I valued most was the music.
Mm-hmm. And what did you think of the music?
Music is great.
For me, that's an absolutely great vindication. That's a tremendous feeling, which you know, whatever you can imagine.
А теперь можно простить брата?
Простить брата? Конечно, почему нельзя?
Murat's plan had worked. Out of discord, he brought harmony. And benefit was made to the glorious nation of Kazakhstan.
Okay, so that was Arun Rath, terrific reporter. Victoria Gamberg, the same producer who did the Russia story, just worked out that way. She's an extremely talented producer now in the Middle East, researching some stories for us. In this lineup, actually between those two stories, we have a story that's not ready yet, but just to give you an idea of the diversity we'll have in the show, it's about Fela Kuti, the great creator of Afrobeat music in Nigeria. And it's about his son, actually his two sons, who are carrying on his tradition of very political music and great dance, powerful African meets James Brown kind of music. So that's Marco Werman reporting that story. That'll be a long, substantial, terrific story, very different kind of music. And then we have what?
Our stories.
Oh, yeah. I hear her voice precedes her. But Marissa will explain what's next.
Yes, so pretty much the way each show is going to be structured is that we're going to have three main segments, and then we're going to close it out with what we're calling the global hit. So it's really just a piece of wonderful music that we want to share with our audience. And this time around, we were fortunate enough to get Marisa, who's a fado singer from Portugal. So fado is pretty much the national music of Portugal. And I was the reporter working on that piece, and you'll get to see it right now. So.
And this, just to warn you, this is a work. The song is totally done. It's spectacular. Marisa and I went up and filmed this. She performed this just for us. But there's an introduction to this that's still being edited. So there'll be a lot more of Marisa setting the stage here, explaining fado music and so forth. So you just see a little taste of Marisa before Maritza. And this, as Marisa was saying, this is really what we want to leave the audience with after three substantial reported stories about the world and music. This is pure performance. And we'll talk about it afterwards.
Our stories tonight have been about music and presidents, music and politics. But fado transcends all of that. It goes right to the Portuguese soul. And that's what Marisa sings for us tonight. Minha Alma, or My Soul.
Mas eu juro, meu amor, que namoro o meu passado sem lhe dizer para onde vou. De mim eu sou o mar, de outras terras, de outras gentes que não vi. O meu canto é o meu sonho, não morreu meu amor. Meu amor, eu sou povo, sou mais longe do que eu.
That shoot was directed by Frank Zamacona. I don't know if Frank's here tonight, but Frank is a terrific friend and really did a great job with that. So that's the idea, is that every show will end with some kind of global hit. This was fairly formal on the stage, as you saw, sort of goes with the style of singer she is. Some of these will be shooting in the field with people. Now, we're pressing time. Emily, do we have the Fela tape there? We want to? Okay, take a time. Sorry, I sprung that on you. Just to give you a taste, maybe a Fela. Let's take some questions. It's 7 already. Yes. Steve, hi. Good question. We haven't decided yet. I mean, the song is, as Marissa said, it's My Soul, and it's, you know, Lisbon, I Want to Make Love to You, or Lisbon, Make Love to Me. It's very nationalistic and very emotional and sexy. That's right. It's a good question. Email me. Do you want subtitles or no subtitles? I mean, clearly, we're subtitling. We're not going to do voiceover of actors or anything like that. We are going to subtitle the people, as you saw in the stories. Others, yeah.
Do you know what the time slot is
going to be? No, we don't know yet. Pretty much, we're looking at January dates. They're sorting it out right now.
I mean, the good news is that PBS has already said, based on, PBS has seen what you just saw. No one else in the world has seen this except this room, the people who worked on the stories, and a handful of PBS vice presidents. And they have, based on this, said this is a primetime show. And so they'll run it. Thank you. Yeah. So that much we know. That much we know. But they will, when we turn in the pilot, then they will decide in September if it's a series, and how many episodes. And, I mean, I've been working for PBS for longer than you want to know, and I know when they like something and when they don't, and they're very engaged in this. They want this to work. I would really have to screw this up at this stage to blow it. Yeah.
Have you
Yeah, I'm going to tell some story you'd love to do. But, yes, we have the longest story list imaginable, and we have great, wonderful arguments and fights about what's in and what's out.
Right.
But, you know, what's the story you're going to do?
Well, one idea that is pretty much a natural for me is Up All Night in Rio, which is something that I do pretty often. So that's one thing we're looking at. We're looking at different themes. We're looking at a revival theme. But like Steve said, it's a very long list, and we're all very excited for the different stories that we're going to present. So,
one theme, as Marissa said earlier, like this is presidential suites. It helps to market it to have some sort of theme to hold it together. And the bridges in between will explain this. Marco Werman is the host. So he'll come on at the beginning. We have an amazing animated title sequence that we're working on. The theme song is done by Vampire Weekend, for any of you who stay up on your... Not too many. You have to be from New York. Hilda's probably heard of Vampire Weekend. Anyway, they're very cool, sort of Afro-poppy kind of group. It's a great song. And a friend... of Marissa's is doing, Piers.
Yes. Yes, he's working on some music for our credit roll at the end. So this is a musician from southern France, and really lovely stuff, and we're hoping to actually do a global hit with him as well.
And it's called 1,000 Miles, so it's a big travel song. Yeah. Now you're talking. Yes. They will, and maybe we do a CD of these, if people are still buying CDs these days. And to really jump ahead, to just put it out there, we want to bring some of the people we discover around the world to the United States to do concerts. So not that we're going to get heavily into the concert promotion business, but we are going to put some people on. Marco's based at WGBH in Boston. They have a great performance space there. There are other spaces here. So when we come across someone who's truly amazing that we think hasn't had access to an American audience, we're going to bring them. Thank you. All right. That's the hard question. Well, the easy part first. Oregon Public Broadcasting, OPB, in Portland is our presenting station. Why? Because they love developing new series, because they really believe in documentaries, and they've had good luck with PBS recently on getting shows on, and because their executive producer is my oldest friend. who I started making films with in college in Vietnam together, Dave Davis. So I trust him. I've got my brother on one side. I've got my brother-in-law on the other side. Keep this whole thing going. Now, money. PBS gave us half our funding, and that's a lot of money from PBS these days. So all power to PBS so far. They've been really good. We have to raise matching money. And Talbot Players has been putting money into this to keep it going, and we're actively raising money. We are looking for underwriting. We would have talked to a couple of corporations, I don't want to name any now, who have told us they're going to give us money, but we haven't signed contracts and we don't have checks yet. So we are actively seeking money, both for the pilot and for the series. Short answer is yes. My wife was born and raised in South Africa, very active in the anti-apartheid movement, and if I don't do a story about South Africa, I basically can't go home. So sooner or later, there will be a Nelson Mandela story in soundtracks. And yes, there's terrific music. And politically, we couldn't fit every story into this. It's really hard to pick and choose, but I know exactly what you mean with Jacob Zuma. We will do South Africa stories. We're going to do a lot of Africa stories. Frankly, one of the hardest things is we know we're going to Cuba. We know we're going to Brazil, or Marissa won't work for me anymore. We know we're going to Mali. We know we're going to Ireland. We know we're going to the Middle East. There are so many great places, and there's so many great stories. So that's why Bob Kahlo and I get to argue over lattes in North Beach, which we always dreamed of doing.
What is the dream length of the series? How many?
Well, for our first season, we're looking at 6 episodes, and from there, it'll go up. So probably 8 or 10 for the second season.
And we want to have a very active website. The series that I worked on before, Frontline World, we had a terrific website. It's an ongoing website. It's great. Some friends, Matt Vree over there, Charlotte, Andres, I see y'all. Thanks for coming. They've got a great website. We really want to have a knockout website for this, including downloads of music, sidebars. For instance, in the Russia story, the heavy metal all-women's band, if you can't get enough of that, sidebars of all their songs. You can get to know them very well. Also, while our crew was there, there was a pretty brave anti-Putin protest where everyone got beaten up and arrested. That's going to be a sidebar story all by itself. There's also a scene where Alexis goes into Red Square with the Putin impersonator and walks around Red Square where Stalin is, there's a Stalin impersonator, there's a Lenin impersonator. It's quite a funny scene. We thought it was a bit of a sidebar for the TV show, but it's a wonderful 2-minute spot about impersonators of Russian strongmen and the tourists who love them. So all that we intend for this website to be very rich and exciting, and to have Marissa and other reporters in the show do blogs on their travels. Okay, long story. Here's the short version. Actually, a gentleman here was asking about the Jacob Zuma story. Another contender for this episode was going to be a story about Carla Bruni. Because the weird thing is, here's a pop singer who's the First Lady of France, but she's still singing. In fact, she sang at the Nelson Mandela birthday party at Radio City Music Hall, 91st birthday party just last Saturday. So in the end, she'll probably do something with this, but they didn't want to be in this show. So Carla was out. We had to come up with something. We went to our story list, and there was Kazakhstan. Terry Gross did an interview about this with Aaron Baron Cohen, but we'd heard about it before. And truth is, Emily Taguchi made that story possible because she got Murat Bisangaliyev and Aaron Baron Cohen on the phone, tracked them down, and talked them into doing this. So that story really Emily made possible. You know, as many as I can afford. Now, for the global hit, that final, that was four or five, Emily?
Four.
Thank you. Okay. And that'll be typical for that segment, probably. In the field, one always, of course, usually two, sometimes occasionally more, but basically two. We're trying to keep down costs, but it's a travel series. We're incidentally going to go all over the United States, too. This isn't going to be the world and not the United States, so we're going to have a lot of music. One story we want to do is Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings. Anybody know Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings? Okay, great. So we'll follow her probably to London. But we could definitely do stories in San Francisco. If there's a good music story here, we'll do it. But key sound, happy to have Christopher Hedge working with us and other really good sound people, because it's got to be shot beautifully. And we were lucky this first time out, but you have to have terrific sound if it's a music show. So that's why it's not cheap to do this. Basically, very roughly, a minimum of a week and as much as 2 weeks on a story, and then some types of stories we're going to have to follow over time, so there'll be a different schedule for that. But as a general rule, for budgeting purposes, that's what we're looking at. So a lot of preparation before people go out. I'll be relying on reporters to develop stories, on producers. We're looking for the best possible producers for stories. You're basically only as good as your producers and your crew. So we've got some really good people. See a couple of people in the back who we're going to recruit for this. That's you, Amanda. Looking at you. The trick to make this work and make this work for me is to hire really good people and to then let them do something they're passionate about.
Margo Orman has done a million global hits. Are you going to shy away from global hits that you've done over time, or do you want to touch on some of those that you've put on the world?
Very quickly on that, we have a formal arrangement with Public Radio International, with his show, The World, which KQED runs 2 o'clock in the afternoons. Good show. Marco's been doing that for years. And they are going, every time we're on the air, we will have a story on that show. And we're going to do heavy cross-promotion. So the idea is to, cover the media landscape with this show. There's going to be a website, there's going to be the TV series, and there's going to be a radio show. And the radio show, at least the stories will be on The World. It may expand from that in the long run. So we're going for broke on this. And really, the idea is that, there are a lot of good music shows that you can actually find scattered around, performance shows and so forth. they're kind of marginalized, especially on PBS, unless they run them during Pledge. I mean, we really have insisted that this be a primetime show and that that's the only game we want to play. So that's what PBS has gone for. That's, frankly, that's what's really exciting about this, because I've been in this system long enough to know how hard it is to launch a series from scratch, to get it on primetime, to make it stick. And that's the shot we've got here. That's what's exciting about it.
Yes, that's definitely an opportunity that we would want to utilize the website for, to delve deeper behind the stories and, yeah, really giving people an opportunity to connect in some way. So,
absolutely. Incidentally, that's Rosalie Howarth, my favorite disc jockey on KFOG, who does Acoustic Sunrise and a lot of great shows. Very good person. Thank you. But, yeah, you know, we... This show is really going to use music, both because we love music and care about music very strongly, and we want to highlight music, but it's really using music to understand the world. So a lot of these stories, if you look at these stories, they're going to be very political stories. They're going to be stories about poverty. They're going to be stories about AIDS. They're going to be stories about global warming, about people losing their languages, about minority groups under, you know, pressure from majority groups in different countries. That's what we're going to do in this show. It's going to be a very journalistic show with music. And some of these stories, as Bob and I have discussed a lot, are going to be a lot grittier than others. We have music and sports stories. We have music and medicine stories. Yes, but believe me, we're open to good ideas. And if a producer comes to us, or a person who really knows something is writing a book about something, you know, we will cut them in on stories. We're not going to steal story ideas from people. But people are starting to present us with some really fascinating stories. So we have our own list. We know things that we know about and care about. But believe me, we're open. The heart, you know... That's the exciting part. That's the fun part of this show. So, yes, we do. Well, I'll tell you, it really, you know how they call, like, soccer the beautiful game and how the Brazilians play soccer like they're dancing? Well, I thought, okay, great. We'll send Marissa down there. We'll get some Brazilian soccer players. We'll review their footage. We'll film their games, watch their fans, and set it to music. And have them talk about the music, because they are influenced by music. Or my son, who's a hardcore Giants fan, has pointed out to me that, of course, when people step into the batter's box, they play their song. And the songs used to be, you know, R&B when a black player would get up, and country and western, or rock and roll for a white guy. Now, there are all these Dominican players, right, coming up. So you hear a lot of Latin music in the baseball park. Well, what's on those guys' iPods? You know, what gets them going? Go back to the Dominican Republic with some of these guys. So, yeah. Taste of Fela? Okay. So this is something we're going to use in the story. This is actually a musical that was performed off-Broadway in New York. It's terrific. I really recommend this. I loved it. And... it tells his whole story. This is an actor playing Fela. So we're going to use this in our story, but this is the musical that you're watching. So it just gives you a taste of his music, his political music. Our story, we go to Lagos, It's a very gritty story in the middle of interviewing one of Fela's sons, Sheyun Kuti, who's kind of the focus of our story. He's the youngest son carrying on his father's music. There's a guy, he's talking about violence in Nigeria, and there are gunshots, and the crew hits the deck in the room, and Marco Werman, being a lunatic, gets up with a still camera and takes picture, and there's a guy who's been shot and is bleeding in the street right outside the window, and he pulls a gun and starts firing back at the guy who shot him, and the cameraman finally gets up and starts to film this, and it all settles down, and it swings back to Sheyun, and he says, you know, welcome to Lagos. So that's the on-the-road, gritty part of this show. So first of all, we'll just go out on this. We'll cut this off at some point. It's a long musical. It'll just give you a taste of this. I want to thank you so much for coming. We really, this is, you know, we've kept a low profile. And we now are going to start coming out of the closet and kind of announcing this and beating the bushes for money and starting to publicize this. It's all building up ahead of steam. So we really appreciate your support and interest, and we'll keep you on our mailing list if you give us your addresses, okay? Thank you very much for coming.
Every day you'll find them inside bus.
Shopping and smiling.
49 sitting, 99 standing.
Shopping and smiling.
Them go pack themselves in like sardines.
Shopping and smiling.
Them they faint, them they wake like cock.
Shopping and smiling.
Them go to the house. Water no day.
Shopping and smiling.
Them go to the bed. Power no day.
Shopping and smiling.
Them go to the road. Go slow, go come.
Shopping and smiling.
Them go to the road. Police go slap.
Shopping and smiling.
Them go to the road. Army go whip.
Shopping and smiling.
Them go look pockets. Money no day.
Shopping and smiling.
Every day not the same thing.
Shopping.
Every day, now the same thing. So far forward. Well, who knows? I am no psychiatrist. Maybe it is a game we play. I run for president. They remove my name from the ballot. I declare my home the Independent Republic of Calcutta. And they burn my house. I call for the overthrow of the military government, and they try and lock me up. 200 times I've been hauled into court. 200 times I come fighting back, like Muhammad Ali. Rope-a-dope, waiting, watching for that opening. My turn now. How to get back at those zombies. Zombie. Zombie no go unless you tell him to go. Zombie no go stop unless you tell him to stop. Zombie no go turn unless you tell him to turn. Zombie no go think unless you tell him to think. Zombie. Zombie. Zombie no go go unless you tell him to go. Zombie no go stop unless you tell him to stop.
Stop, stop, stop.
Zombie no go turn unless you tell him to turn. Zombie no go think unless you tell him to think. No bread, no job, no sense. A door, a door. Tell him to go kill. A door, a door. No bread, no job, no sense. A door, a door. Go and kill. Go and die. Go and quench. Put down 40 bars. Go and quench. Go and kill. Go and die. Put down 40 bars. Go and die. Go and kill. Go and burn, go and die.
quick march, slow march, left turn, right turn, about turn, double up, salute, open your hat, stand at ease, fall in, fall out, fall down, get ready, quick march, slow march, left turn, right turn, about turn, double up, salute, open your hat, stand at ease, fall in, fall out, fall down, get ready, ha! Some boys stand like this all day on the street corner until the army recruiter sees them and says, what the ha! Think chance, quick march, slow march, left turn, right turn, about turn, double up, salute, open your hand, stand at ease, fall in, fall out, fall down, get ready, quick march, slow march, left turn, right turn, about turn, double up, salute, open your hand, fall in, fall out, fall down, get ready, ha! Zombie went on one way, a door to die, a door to zombie went on one way, a door to die, a door, ha!
So that will be in our story, and we also go to the actual, they call that the shrine, which still exists. Fela created that. He died in 97. He'd been arrested 200 times, as he said. And we call it Black President because he ran for president of Nigeria as a protest candidate several times, and he put out a CD, Black President. And in our story, his youngest son, who's still only 26, Seyun Kuti, tells us he's going to run for president of Nigeria. So it's political. Okay, thanks again. Appreciate it.